Welcome back to the Candid Podcast. This week's guest is the incredible Nez Jibril, who was the founding CEO of the Dubai Design and Fashion Council.
Which is a really, you know, impressive title to have. Zahra has known Nez for a while, but this was my first time meeting her, and her story is amazing. Like, where she started and where she ended up is just this whirlwind of adventure.
Yeah.
Super, super interesting life story and an incredible set of expertise to back that up.
The thing is, I knew Nez was incredible in what she does, but hearing her backstory, it made me love her even more. And she really is inspirational. She's worked with incredible people. And now where she's pivoted her career has been great, which she's done a lot.
Yeah.
So we discuss her journey from working for nonprofit to now consulting in the Middle East. And if you're someone that's going through a phase in your life where you don't know what you're doing or you have to start over again, I think this episode's definitely for you.
Or if you're a fan of the Beckhams, there's a little interesting tidbit for you there.
Yeah, it's really, really great. And I'm excited for you guys to hear this episode.
This is Candid
with Hanin and Zahra. So today's guest is the wonderful Nez Jibril. I've known Nez for how many years now? I mean, I don't want to show our age, but we've known each other for quite some time. And I don't think we've actually sat and spoken properly about ourselves. So I'm really excited for this little episode.
You look scared. I'm not scared at all. I'm very excited. But I was just trying to think when we first met, maybe 7 years ago?
Was it 7 years
maybe
ago?
Maybe longer?
Yeah.
Maybe it was the Tashkil days. I don't know.
Oh, my God. Ooh, yeah.
You guys got way back.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. Yeah.
The Tashkil days.
I like how that's when you know it's been a long time.
Just gives us some substance.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but it's good. We're the OGs, you could say. So one of the things we do when we first start is we ask our guests to tell us about themselves in 30 seconds.
Oh, blimey. Yeah. Oh, I have to start?
Yes.
Okay. I'm a Virgo. No, so I don't really know where to start. So anyway, I was mixed heritage. I'm Arab, Greek and Turkish, but grew up for most of my life in the UK. I've lived all around the world because of work. And I came to Dubai 10 years ago. And I'd already had quite a full career, so it was really starting from scratch for me because I knew no one. I didn't come for a job. I was typical sort of expat coming with her husband because I really wanted him to have that experience of working abroad as I had done in the past. So, you know, usual things, developed a bit of a stutter because I'm actually I'm this weird dichotomy of hermit and extrovert.
Really? I would never have guessed.
Oh yeah,
especially with the positions you've had, you've kind of had to be in it, you know.
But then you're kind of playing a role, so you're sort of hiding, aren't you, behind. But when I have to go out of my comfort zone, and also I just really hadn't expected at this sort of stage of my life to start all over again. I was really pushing myself because I couldn't really imagine life here just going to the mall every week. That was not going to be me. Yeah. So discovered all the Emirates. You know, we first landed in Abu Dhabi. I call that my year of denial. Still was winding down my work, so still traveling to New York and London. So I hadn't quite settled then. And then as a fellow cat lover, you understand this, but my husband made me ship over my cats.
Which is what you do when you leave a country. You take your pets with you.
Probably one of the most expensive things we've done. And he was right. Once they were over, had some home comforts. Then I started to settle, and I think one of the first people I met was Nadine Kanzo.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, she, you know, how warm and wonderful she is. Mm-hmm. She just opened her life. And then I slowly met other friends through her, Ghada Slim, and all these other people that just were so warm and welcoming. And I just settled straight in. Soon after, was headhunted for several roles. And one of which was actually Al Ain Football Club, so you'll laugh.
Oh, yeah.
That's so random. I was not expecting that.
Because you're mainly in fashion.
Well, actually, no. So if we take maybe a million years steps back, I started my career actually off in human rights.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Not that that has anything to do with football, but... I had actually travelled to Afghanistan with the UN as a research assistant on the decentralisation of the health system.
Oh, wow.
And when I was there, obviously fell in love with the country. Everything from the people to the land, it was so huge. I didn't really understand. I mean, you can read as much as you want about a place, but you don't get the feel of it until you're there. So, you know, it's huge in terms of geography, landscape, in terms of the way people look and behave and their culture and their language, all in one country. It was the first time I'd kind of really seen that. And I was just a kid out of university as well. So I also saw some pretty horrific things, as you can imagine. This was back in 96, actually, when the Taliban were taking over the first time. So one of the things I really noticed was, A, no one ever talked about Afghanistan, and B, there was no fundraising. They didn't have the money to do things. So when I came back to London, that's where my focus was raising awareness and talking about these places, and I really got into human rights. I'd been into human rights anyway as a kid, but this is where I thought my vocation in life was.
And that was not what happened when you moved here, correct?
Well I still got way.
Yeah, so because this is the first time I meet Nez, so I'm super fascinated by your story and I want to know your entire trajectory.
Okay,
so. Where you started and where your journey took you for you to sit here with us today. Mm.
Okay, so when I got back then, I had to, again, this is a running theme, is restart my career. So I went into fundraising and marketing. And I just was so desperate to save the world that I went back to doing work experience and working for basically nothing until I got the roles that I wanted. And then actually it wasn't until I worked for everyone from Refugee Council, Womankind Worldwide, Fair Trade Foundation, just trying to gain as much knowledge and experience as I could. And then I ended up in Amnesty International. And this is where my life took another turn. And I was dealing with high net worth individuals, communicating to them some of the courses, making sure I was fine-tuning, you know, trying to understand them and their interests and fine-tuning the communication with them. And Amnesty asked me to go on tour with Eurythmics. So I was like, oh my God. My mother, of course, and my father were like, oh my God, sex, drugs, rock and roll. And it was really just hummus and carrot sticks and, you know, nothing overexciting. But they asked us to organize the fundraising press and marketing initiatives with each Amnesty office internationally. And half the proceeds went to Amnesty from the tour and half went to Greenpeace. And that's where I met Simon Fuller, who tried to persuade me to go and work with him because he couldn't quite understand how I wasn't fazed by anything. But I'd just been to Afghanistan. I was reading about all these horrific things happening in the world. So to me, this was... It was nothing.
I mean, it's Annie Lennox, but it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, she's pretty phenomenal, that woman. And she also is so super interested in the world and can take herself out of her privileged world and feel for others and support. She's always been quite consistent in that. So it took Simon about a year to persuade me into his company because I was initially like, I'm not prostituting myself to the corporate world. But he, you know, he was like, you can still support, we can still do initiatives within the company. And then I ended up, yes, at 19 Entertainment, where initially started off back then, it was 19 music actually. So it started off in music company, and then it went into TV with American Idol. A little bit about Simon is he was the Spice Girls manager.
Yeah.
So then he created American Idol, which we helped work with him on that from a creative front. And then, you know, that's when I started like traveling the world with work, and we opened offices in LA and New York. He also created programs like So You Think You Can Dance. You know, he managed Kelly Clarkson and all those guys that came out of all those shows. I mean, we really disrupted the industry, but many would say we probably destroyed it. But I like to think
there's a lot of musicians came out of like American Idol that are still going, and they're still apparently doing really well.
So yeah, and it gave people an equal platform, I think. And I think, you know, one year more people voted for American Idol than they did in the election, which,
American Idol is more fun, if we're going to be honest. So I would rather vote for singers.
Well, if only some of them were ruling, anyway. Yeah. Politically, probably a bit more savvy than who we have. So that's how I got into the entertainment industry. And then from there, how I got into fashion was I was leaving LA, had all my bags with me, and Simon was like, listen, I need you to attend a meeting in the south of France. Now, I had been there, you know, I had trunk loads of things, so I didn't want to go via London to a tiny little airport in Nice to then drive like an hour into the mountains. But anyway, you know, Simon Fuller says that you do.
Yeah.
So ended up on a yacht, and the meeting was with David and Victoria Beckham. So at that point, it was really hush-hush because David was with SFX and Victoria was in a deal with Damon Dash. I don't know if you remember him.
No, I don't.
Or Rockefeller and all of that. You look him up.
Yeah.
You will remember. Okay. He was the Kanye West of the time.
Mm. Oh, okay. Yes. Yes.
So got back to London. I was meant to be working on another project. I think they requested to work with me, and then I ended up working with them for over 7 years. For Simon Fuller, sort of day-to-day management and sort of building there with our internal teams, commercial, creative strategies, and building them as, I guess, Beckham brand as we know it now. And so we developed our fashion business within those years.
Oh, wow.
But we were very careful how we did that because just to give you some insight, like for David, when we started working with him, he had like 35 commercial deals. And people were at the time complaining that, you know, he wasn't focused on the pitch. Mm. So it's also about changing people's perception. He's, you know, the same footballer. They wanted to see him on the pitch and more focused. So we actually brought it down to 4 major deals where he earned more money and spent less time off the pitch. So everyone was happy from the brands, the him, the fans. And then it's all about relationships. You really get to build those relationships with the brands and the acceptance. And then, of course, with your fans. Mm. With Victoria, we were still in a deal where we had to finish this Damon Dash. I was trying to remember the name of the label. Of course, I'm not sure why I've forgotten it, but I have. So we had to release a single, and we knew that she could have produced the best single in the world and people would have hated it. They would, you know, at that time, she was probably one of the most disliked people on the planet. It was so sad. So we timed it well. It got to top 3, which was a success. And you could see in her that she just didn't want to do music anymore. She just hated being berated. And we talked about fashion, and we talked about, you know, what it was that people see within her. And we talked to many people in the fashion industry just to get perspective, some good, some not so good, some really bad. And we sort of knew that we would have to change her perception? Because in music, things happen very fast. In fashion, as you know, it's sort of a slow, it's a timetable, you work way ahead. So it's also retraining her in her mind and educating her. So when she's talking to buyers, when she's talking to the press, she's talking from a place of knowledge. So we worked on a few sort of smaller projects where she could really learn the industry before she then released her now-known brand.
But I think that's remarkable, because it's funny that, you know, we're talking about Victoria Beckham, because I think she's one of the few celebrities that managed to establish herself as a well-respected designer. Her fashion is not one of those, like, celebrity spin-off lines that, you know, last for a couple of seasons and then it's gone. I'm not going to name anyone, but, you know. But she's transitioned herself really well from a Spice Girl to a proper respected designer. And I think that's remarkable, because a lot of people fail to launch a brand that's separate from their previous career. So,
and also, I think we were very clear, and we didn't trying to think of the correct word. We based it basically on she had the eye of the consumer, because she'd bought beautiful pieces for the last 10 years before building the brand. She knew exactly as what fitted a woman, what she felt comfortable in. And as one of the most photographed women in the world, she had to feel comfortable in her clothes from every angle, which was so intimidating with like 40 photographers trying to get a hideous shot of you. So I think she, more than anyone, really understood the importance of feeling confident in what you wear. And then, of course, we had worked with Roland Murray, who mentored her and worked with us on building the team. And so we had some amazing people as part of it and part of the growth.
Amazing. So having all that experience and doing all of that, how was it then to transition to Dubai?
Well, there was a number of things that happened, actually, between then. So I had probably one of the worst carbon footprints in the company, because I was just traveling so much. And I'd moved back from LA, and I just wanted to settle in London. I was so happy to be in London. And then, Zahra, you might know a bit more about me in terms of my relationship with my mum, but I'm super close to my family and my mum. There's a lot of things that we've been through as a family that made us extra close. And so she developed breast cancer. Now, that's when my world fell apart. And I've always, you know, been this sort of strong, courageous one, but I just couldn't function. And I realized that I kind of looked around me and I had a moment of like pure clarity where I realized this is not even my life. And of course I knew that, but you build your professional life and you hide behind your professional life. And I thought, I've got to see me again, see my family and friends and, you know, love life a little. Thank God she, you know, survived. But, you know, I then left 19 Entertainment after over 10 years of being a senior management team. And that was a big shock to everyone in the industry. But, you know, I had two fractured hips. I had five abscesses. I was a physical mess, and I just didn't have time to look after myself because I was too busy running this big business. So, you know, so through some of the worst things that can happen to you, some of the best things then come out of it. And another big lesson actually that happened to me during that time was realizing I didn't have to be strong, that other members of the family could look after, you know, us. It wasn't just about me leading the way and looking after everyone. And that's where my brother came into his own. He's older than me, but I realized, oh my God, he was the tower of strength. So there was a lot of lessons. And actually, I was then vulnerable enough. And as Roland Murray said to me, you weren't super Nez, so you allowed someone in your life. And that's when I met my husband, at my probably weakest and lowest time. Yeah, he took advantage of me.
No.
No, I'm just joking. But, you know, he was right. I made room for someone. I allowed for someone to come into my life. And, you know, I had to. You do have to show a certain amount of vulnerability when you go into a relationship, whether it be friends, whether it be your partner, whether whoever, your family as well. And that's what I also learned through all of that. Anyway, so we then managed to find time to get married. And funnily enough, I introduced my now husband to my mum 2 weeks into dating.
That's early.
That's fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. So on the second date, we were like, this is happening, isn't it?
Oh, wow.
We're going to be together forever. Yeah. And that was it. And also at that point, I didn't know if Mama was going to survive or not. So I wanted her to see that there would be a bit of happiness. Mm. I'm going to get emotional.
Oh, no. It's okay. It's a safe place.
But, yeah, so 4 months after we then got married, he was like, oh, I have a job in Saudi. I was like, oh, my God, great. And
you had to sign those papers, didn't you?
Yeah. So I thought, right, I'm going to handle this two ways. Either I refuse to go, because don't forget, I was still very active, and I was just enjoying being home, especially after everything that happened. And anyway, he went to Saudi, and he was like, that's not the place for us right now. So we compromised on the UAE. His office was in Abu Dhabi, so we settled there. But obviously, I was still working on several projects. And because I didn't have children back then, it was really hard to connect with people, much harder than here. And I was just saving cats in between, like, work projects.
The dream, can I just say? The dream.
And then we eventually sort of settled in Dubai. And actually, funnily enough, it was actually my mother who was quite instrumental in me and my career over here, because she got invited by the UK government as part of Made Britain to come over. And she'd had a number of meetings set up. And I'd been hearing from another friend who ran an agency over here about D3, you know, Design District. Oh, this would be perfect for you. You know, you should go and speak to them. And at that point, you know, I don't forget I had my stutter and my twitch. I was, you know, feeling quite out of my comfort zone and knowing no one. So, you know, I really wanted to understand the landscape a lot more. So I set about understanding about the creative industries here. And another huge aspect of my life is the mentorship side, where I'd been mentoring for years. So I wanted to also mentor talent in the region and just share, you know, I knew I'd been lucky enough to have this vast experience. And I wanted to share that. And I wanted to make sure that I was investing back into my roots. So my mum had actually, as part of their Made Britain, a meeting with D3, where they presented who they were and, you know, all of that. And I met a lady called Lindsay Miller. We started chatting, and Lindsay was like, oh, I think you'd be good for something I know. And next thing you know, I was talking to them about the CEO role for Dubai Design Fashion Council and being the founding CEO for that and setting that up.
Yeah, and that's how I actually met you. So your story is incredible. Like, I didn't realize that there was such a different... You've taken so many different paths to get to where you were when we met.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to hear.
I think the biggest thing for me is never saying no. However uncomfortable it might be for me, I've always just said yes. Even in those 10 years at 19 with Simon, if he said, oh, can you go off to this place? Yep, sure. And then I would have to deal with the consequences, which would usually be me stopping myself. So I tried not to overthink things and never turn down an opportunity. And quite honestly, I wouldn't, even if I'd tried to plan my career, I wouldn't have been able to. I've met some amazing people and traveled to some amazing places. And I still continue to do so.
Yeah. Oh, it's true. I mean, if you hadn't said yes, you probably wouldn't even be here, or you're like just coming out of your comfort zone. I think we always forget that.
Yeah.
that really leaving our comfort zone is where things start to take place, and where you suddenly realize, wait a second, this is actually what I wanted and what I was trying to work for. I just didn't realize because I was always like holding myself back. So it's great to know that you can get to where you were hoping you'd get by just saying yes.
Yeah, and it's okay to be scared and to, you know, not necessarily fail. I hate the word fail, but not understand and ask for help. I think that's completely fine, you know. And I still struggle with self-confidence like everyone else, but I know it's myself, it's me that stops me from doing things. Even coming back this summer, I was like, you know what, Nez, you've got to be less of a hermit. You've got to say yes, which, you know, brings me here today. Yes. I wouldn't, you know, if you'd come to me last year, I would have been quite happy in my, you know, quarantine sort of phase in that sort of privileged life that I'd led at home.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm sure, Henning, you've also been through that where you're like, oh no, I wish I didn't agree to this. I shouldn't be doing this. I just want to be at home, just in my little comfort bubble.
I think COVID has just amplified that problem though. Because if you have the tendency to kind of cocoon at home, it just made it 100 times more difficult to go out. And I think this year, with things slowly starting to go back to normal, it's now or never kind of thing. It's like, okay, if I really don't push myself this year to try new things, I'm going to just drag on in my little cocoon for another God knows how long.
I mean, it was the same with us with the podcast.
Yeah.
We've been talking about it for so long,
and we said if we don't do it now, we're just going to keep talking about it. So it's really interesting that you're here with us today, because I think for me, I would have felt the same way. If last year someone told me you should record the podcast, I'd be like, oh, no. No, I'm not going to put myself out there. No, I'm not ready. But somehow this year made it possible to explore new things or break out of your comfort zone a little bit.
Yeah. And actually, it's really inspiring to hear you say that, because when I look at you, I think, oh my God, Nez, like, she's done it all. And now I know even more about your background. I'm like, oh my God, she's like, this is the level of success I want. But then to know that you've also went through a phase where you're like, oh my God, I'm just going to say yes, because even though I hate this, like, I don't want to, it's out of my comfort zone, I just said yes and it worked out. It gives you hope, because there's so many things on my to-do list that I've always wanted to do, but I've just been kind of still stuck in my comfort zone. So if it's great to hear that people like you also go through that and eventually come out on the other side.
Yeah, of course, we're all completely human, you know, and that fragility, I think, is important, you know, and we'd be lying to ourselves if we didn't allow ourselves to have those difficult days and to have those, enjoy those good days. I mean, I think having it more balanced and less extreme, like I probably used to, is better, it's healthier. But, you know, I also, in this last year, because I could hide a little, I was, you know, Zoom life was perfect for me. And I ended up working on some amazing projects, and for me, you know, learning something new really kind of feeds into my appetite for knowledge. And I learned all about the kind of crypto world and worked with a company where we set up a studio and got $2 million investment. And, you know, there was all these things I actually learned that I thought I couldn't do. Because, again, you know, you get also a bit comfortable, I think, in Dubai.
Yes.
And I needed to be pushed professionally again. And I'm always thirsty for that. So it's been a great year as well in terms, right, professionally, but I think more personally, again, you know, just knowing that I had to, and understanding yourself, and knowing that if I don't start doing these things or going out, even if it's just coffee with a friend or lunch or whatever it might be, it's important to do that.
But isn't that the hardest thing? It's the hardest thing to take that first step.
Yeah, of course.
To say yes to that coffee, to say yes to that meeting. It's that first step that I find is the most difficult one. And once you kind of take that step, everything rolls a little bit easier.
I think it also depends on your circle of friends. So, like, my friends have been joking and laughing that this was perfect for me. You know, COVID was like...
Are you Zahra? Yeah. She was thriving during quarantine. Yeah.
I mean, a lot of bad things happened, of course, but it was nice not to go out and not feel... Like, it was nice to stay home and not feel guilty that you haven't gone out.
I'm a bit distressed about us not wearing masks and then people will recognize each other.
I know for me, during when COVID was really like high and stuff and we were wearing masks, it was also during Ramadan and I wear Shayla Abaya during Ramadan. So I was in complete incognito.
She was incognito. Nobody recognized
And it was the best feeling ever. So yeah, I understand that part.
But I think, you know, you've got to also remember that when you do make the effort to go and whether it be making your bed or have your shower or go for your coffee, then you realise, actually, I enjoyed this. Mm. What was stopping me from doing it? And it's just, again, you know, of course you have to have those days where you really can't manage it or you just, something's stopping you. But I think, you know, don't make them the majority of the times that you feel like that. And try and remember, you know, how lucky you are and blessed you are to have some of the friends that you have and your family and things like that. And, you know, they'll encourage you as well. They'll pick up on it. If you have the right circle of friends, they'll pick up when they need to come and get you.
Mm. Yeah, that support system is very important. Yeah, especially when you're going through something, because sometimes not wanting to go out and not taking that step, it's not that you don't want to, it's that you physically can't because you're dealing with something mentally. And having that support system to help you realize that, you know, it's okay, we're here, you can take your time, and then we're happy to help you come out of that kind of black hole is really important.
Well, yeah. I mean, quite honestly, I didn't even know I had that in me. It wasn't until I was a student, I think, that one of my friends said to me after university, he was like, oh, yeah, you used to just disappear, go off the radar for 3 or 4 months. I was like, did I? So you don't even know, like a lot of the behaviour, you don't even know you're doing it. Yeah. It's only now that I'm so self-aware that, and that's, you know, also because I went on a journey where I had to learn about myself and how I behaved. And I think I touched on that on Instagram somewhere where I talked about being attacked by two guys at knife point in London.
Yeah, I remember.
You know, that's a whole nother discussion, yeah. but that was, again, something in my life that was, you know, brutal in all senses of the word and terrifying and something that still affects me, but it was one of the best things that ever happened to me because it made me tackle life and myself head on where I wouldn't have done before. And that sort of changed my life and probably, you know, lifted me in a position where I could say yes to opportunities.
Wow, that's great. So a trauma that for some people would probably have been like, what's the word?
It would probably break you.
Yeah. It changed you, which is great. Like some, you know, you took the other route of a trauma and worked with it to help you become a better person.
Yeah, professionally, yeah. You know, in amongst my relationships, but also with my brother and mum, you know. My brother always thought I was cold. Because I always felt I had to be the tower of strength and show no emotion and deal with everything that was going on at home. And so he saw me for the first time as well. And we couldn't be closer, especially now. And he realized that I also needed an older brother and I also needed help. And, you know, my mum, brother and I told each other we loved each other for the first time and were much more affectionate. We didn't really show each other affection before. It wasn't part of our household.
Wow.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. But I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I also feel like you had a good enough support system to kind of help you out of these difficult times and maybe change the way you perceived your trauma or perceived the difficulties and kind of manifest it in a different way.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've always been blessed, and I will always say this, in terms of the people that I attract, like, in my life, in terms of friends. And I have some amazing family members. You know, there's my uncle who's like a second dad to me. There's my aunt who's like a second mum. I have cousins. You know, it's not just about my friends, it's also my family. So I know that I didn't go through, I did go through a lot of this actually on my own, because I kept it from them for fear of hurting them, because when something bad happens to you, it hurts them too. But even mentally knowing that they're in the background and they're my foundation gives you courage.
That's great.
So, you've had such an interesting journey in your life and you know, where you started and how you got here, but I want to kind of know what's happening with you in the future. What are you planning for? What do you want to do? Because I feel like you're the kind of person who's never going to sit still and do nothing. You're always going to have something going on. So I want to know what's next for you.
So, I'm consulting and... What I love about the consulting world is that I get to work with, they're usually on global projects. Some are governments, some are global brands, some are startups. And I think it's more about that curation of talent that I work with rather than doing things on my own. In the last year, I've worked with a number of friends in New York and London where we've come together as a team. And I've really enjoyed that process. So I think for me, though, a lot of my focus will still be on the mentorship side. Now, quite honestly, my focus is my family, my son, he's 5. I had him later on in life. And it wasn't an easy journey. So as he gets older, actually, I realise I need to give him more time. This last year, I haven't been around because I've been working with LA and New York and London. So I've been, on calls till 11, 12 at night. And I've seen that's affected him. So I think I'll keep more of a focus regionally, but with an international element to it. And I want to hunker down with some people that I've started working with over here. And we'll be developing some projects and brands together.
Amazing. I feel like you're really good at, reimagining how things should be, like branding and like coming up with a new way of presenting an idea or a person or, I feel like that's your strength.
I think like with people, I love to do that with brands, seeing the best, seeing where they can go, seeing how we can make them grow. And I love that, whether it be with people or whether it be as a brand or a business. Absolutely. You've got me spot on.
That's great.
Yes.
Well, if someone is going through, and I'm sure a lot of people have been going through a phase where they've either had to leave their jobs or they were made redundant and they've had to kind of like start fresh or like reinvent themselves. And since you've seemed to have good experience of starting over again, what advice would you give someone that's going through that, like having to start over again?
I think don't panic. And I would think about, there's the same skill sets, quite honestly, but think about what you really enjoy doing, what you really love doing, where your passion is, and that's what will end up driving you. And also say yes to things. Go out, meet people. You'll find that people will come to you naturally. They'll be like, oh, I didn't know you wanted to work on this. We'd love you to work on this. Or people will start, the minute you start talking, putting yourself out there, things will come. It's just having, again, that courage. And just remember, everyone's in the same boat. No one is better than you. Sometimes I see people talking in meetings and I'm just like...
Can you say that louder for the people in the back? Because
people in the back, we mean Zahra.
I mean, everyone here always thinks they're better.
Yeah.
This is the thing.
No, but also it's good for you to hear that because, when you say, oh, let's do this or let's do that, the automatic thing is... Yeah, but this person has already done that, or this person has already done that.
I think it comes back to confidence, having the confidence. Is that what you're saying, basically?
Yeah, but also you will do things with your vision and your eyes. So even, I don't know what it might be that you were talking about, but even if, like, it was a lipstick, let's just say, okay? There are lipsticks out there, yeah. But you will do it with a different type of storytelling, with a different, you know, essence to it, with a different aesthetic. It will come from your heart. Yeah. It will be, of course, it will be different to everyone else. It's just taking that plunge. And you'll find that once you take that little step, then it's easier to take the next step. And then, you know, always ask for help. I think people forget to ask for help.
Yeah. I think it's because it goes back to, the confidence again. Some people put this front that I know everything, and then when they fail because they don't ask for help because I
But it's also, do you feel like it's in part social media, this whole like,
of course,
I'm a boss babe image and I can do everything myself and I'm all powerful. And I feel like sometimes women overcompensate by taking everything on themselves and they don't ask for help because they say, no, but I can't ask for help. I have to prove I'm stronger. I have to prove I'm more capable. So I think it's very important for everyone to remember you're still a rock star even if you ask for help. It's okay.
Yeah, and you don't have to showcase it on social media anyway. You know, your good or your bad times. I mean, half the time people don't even think I work. But, you know, I provide for several people at home. So, of course I work. And I work on big projects. But I don't feel I need to kind of talk about it or share it with the world. You know, I like to post pictures about cats and silly things and my blue tongue and, or whatever it might be. But I think you should focus less on those around you, especially, I think, you know, where we live. I think there's it feels like sometimes it's a 4D version of Instagram. Mm. You know, we live it. Everyone's living their best life. And that's not reality. No one is living their best life. You know, everyone's going through a hard time. But at the same time, I do think there are really supportive people here. So, you know, you should just reach out.
Yeah. No, that's great advice.
Yeah. I think how she said it, like, just you need to vocalize what you want or what you need, because sometimes people might not know that this is what you're looking for in the first place.
Yeah.
So it's, you know.
And do things to help yourself outside of that. You know, if you think, you know, if I read another quote, actually, I might burst. I don't want anything like that. But one of the kindest things someone did for me this past year was put me on a self-meditation course. It was an online thing. I think it was Mind Valley or something like that. And I did this 8-week course. It was every day. And I got a huge amount out of that. And it was very healing. So it was out of my comfort zone again. But I knew, actually, new experience, learned something new. It could only help me. Mm. And do things like that as well, to be kind to yourself.
Yeah, I agree. I think we always forget we put career first. And then if we're not the type of person that puts career first, we put family first, but then
there's always something first. Yeah. There's always something before you, which is not healthy.
This is good.
Yeah.
That's great.
Be kind to yourself.
Yes. That's a quote. It's a good one.
let's create a little meme with a quote.
I'm going to be sending you quotes all the time now, Ness.
We send each other really cheesy quotes on Instagram just to, you know, make fun of these quotes, but this one's good.
Yeah, so it's cat pictures and quotes. Got it. That's what's going to be coming your way from now on, Ness.
I don't mind dog videos either.
Oh, yeah, I got you. Yeah. Don't worry. Dog videos coming your way.
Thank you so much for being here, Ness. It was so incredible to hear your story and the advice you gave. I'm taking it on board, and I'm sure Henry will as well.
It was kind of reaffirming to hear from someone as successful as you to, like, you know, just ask for help, put yourself out there, say yes to opportunities, because we tend to be like, this imposter syndrome, I'm not good enough. Why would I say yes? They're going to know I'm not amazing at what I do. You know what I mean? Even though you could be the best.
Yeah.
Still that kind of self-doubt.
Yeah.
You know, someone once gave me a piece of advice, is when you say yes to another new opportunity, always make sure there's at least 10% or more of it that you don't quite understand and that you have to reach up and get to the level where you feel you can do the job, because stretch yourself. I think it's really important to stretch yourself beyond where you think, because you can always do more than you think. Mm-hmm. So always take on an opportunity where you think, okay, I'm not quite there. I need to do a little bit. Take that opportunity because you can do more than you realize.
That's great. Amazing. Yeah, I'm definitely taking that on board. Thank you so much,
Nez. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, ladies.